Good evening. I have a new face this evening. Welcome.
Thank you.
How did you hear about us?
You know, I've known about it for a while. I don't remember how I heard it.
But tonight was the night.
Yeah.
Let's do introductions around. You won't remember everybody, but you can.
I'm Donald Rand.
Richie, Sharon, Lauren, Francois, Liz, Sandra, Chris, Emily, Ryan, Wendy, Julie, Susan, Angie. We are studying the precepts. In Buddhist practice, there are sort of three elements that always go together in practicing. I met a man yesterday who was talking about religion. He's made a big study of world religions. And he said religions all start out with this wonderful powerful, deep intention that is really built on loving kindness and some kind of precept, moral principles. And that before you know it, the precepts go out the window as the institution builds and it becomes powerful or wants to become powerful, and people begin to lose the sense of ethics. When I first started studying Zen many years ago, the precepts weren't mentioned by most teachers. You know, it was still a kind of romance about Zen that everybody, sort of the Jack Kerouac take on it, that it's this grand, marvelous enlightenment trip. And we don't have to worry about so much. If everything is Buddha nature, then we can just enjoy it. But that's definitely not the teaching. And we can see in our own life how important it is to have some kind of guidelines for ourselves. This week, we're taking them one by one. We did no killing. Funny to say we did no killing, but that's we carried it around for a week and were quietly surprised by how often it shows up in our life. And this time, this week was about no stealing. So, or no taking what is not given. Back here, I have some notes. So I would like for you all to be the ones to talk mostly. But I wanted to point out with all of these that essentially they're all pointing out in one way or another that there really is no separation between us and them, between me and it, between you and me. Although we live in this sort of jostling world where we're always trying to sort out where we fit and what we're supposed to do, when we calm down and sit quietly, we begin to feel. And it's an experience, not an idea. It's a feeling of how inextricably connected we all are. The precepts are based on that. The precepts are based on the understanding that although we bump into each other and get a lot of bruises, that basically the truth is, in the sense of stealing, that we don't own anything. Nobody does. There is no killing life. Life goes on. I was just down in Big Sur where they had that huge fire last year. And little green is all over those hills. You have these black sticks sticking up. And then all this green and wildflowers. They say there are more wildflowers there than anybody has ever seen. So, the no stealing is about greed and thirst, if you want to look at the negative side of it. I want that eclair in the bakery window. And what do I do about that? I can take a brick and smash the window and take it and run. There are wonderful stories like that. Jean Valjean in Les Misérables, who stole a loaf of bread and suffered terribly for his doing that, out of desperation. In Buddhism, sometimes that's called karma, though that's a kind of funny way of thinking about karma. But it's true, our actions create the situation, whatever our situation is. So trying to get more, trying to keep things or keep them from other people is all about the self, cultivating the self. So I'm curious how it was for you this week. Did you take it home?
I kind of have a question about... what was the wording of it? Do not take what is not given?
That's one.
Is that the...
Well, the one I handed out... Susan, you should have this. Anyone else not have this? Samia. So this wording is, this is the Bodhidharma precept. So the prohibitory one is just no stealing. And we don't say, I vow not to steal, even. We just say, no stealing. And it means, I promise I will try really hard not to steal. And it also means that other side of it where there is no stealing, the compassionate side of it.
I was kind of thinking, I don't know if this is applicable or not, but I also take what is given in the sense of...
Accepting.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. That's the other side of it.
Yeah.
Don't take what's not given and accept what is given with grace. Yeah.
I was kind of just thinking of a lot larger, I don't know, larger, but a lot more general principle that underlies those two things. It's just basic life.
Yes.
And I think that even in the small act of like not stealing something, that's a means of accepting what you have.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Donalyn?
several years ago when we were studying the same precept, and I was it was when Joyce was still coming, and I was picking up Joyce and driving, and when she was up to it, and my schedule fit in to bring her here. And it was the very same precept, and that night as we were leaving, this is so embarrassing, but it's just so telling. So I drove out the parking lot, you know, straight out to at the Alameda, and I pulled over to the bushes, jumped out, left the car running, Joyce in the car, and I started picking the ripe lemons that are on the bushes that are out in the parking lot. And I could hear just Joyce laughing out of her head, you know? And I go, what is she laughing about? And so I just picked a few, got in the car, and I said, here's some, I can pick you more if you want more. And she said, weren't you just sitting in this, weren't you just there with us tonight? Because we were talking about the stealing. And it was like, you know, it was like, oh. That's of course, I was just humiliated. I still now, I just laugh about it. In fact, the last few days I've been noticing the fruit trees being very bright in abandoned fields and houses, and you know, I'm looking at this ripe fruit dropping and everything. But it was just, I just thought that was just really great. It just showed that, you know, thinking about not stealing and that, you know, the other things don't take as much given, right? So it's just like,
all those lemons.
So, yeah. And who knows, to go to waste or not? I mean, or not. Anyway, I don't go around picking food anymore. Unless somebody says I can't.
They have programs for picking fruit for the homeless for Second Harvest. Anyone who has fruit trees and the fruit is going to waste, you can call people and they'll come and find a hungry mouth for it. Samuel?
I don't see what's wrong with it. I mean, the tree's there. I mean, obviously there's not just one lemon, there's tons of them, right? I mean, if it's over in a parking lot, legally, you should enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if it's abandoned trees and...
There's many books written on this kind of thing.
legally, even if it's in someone's yard, you're not allowed to walk onto their grass or whatever. But anything hanging over the side of the house.
No, I mean, I really get that it was really no harm, per se. I mean,
you just weren't thinking.
Yeah, and in thinking in terms of, I mean, that really is taking what's not given me. Though I really get that all that, you know, is fruit in a parking lot that usually just fell to the ground, got ran over.
You didn't think about it first. You didn't think about it first.
And then
decided it was okay.
No, I just took it. So it's something, I mean, it is. It's just something that,
so you
know, I just
about
think.
Everything you think, whether it's given to you or not?
These are about waking us up to what we do.
Yeah.
So it's not that what she did was wrong or illegal. It actually is legal, probably. But that she wasn't paying attention to what she was doing. She was just blindly grabbing. And the precepts keep us out of trouble, you could say. Because as we're doing something, we are aware of what we're doing. It doesn't mean that we're beating ourselves up or anything. It's just, oh, look at me. Look what I'm doing. And then maybe go right ahead and take some lemons, having figured out that that was probably okay. Or maybe having enough doubt to not. But in any case, to not blindly go on automatic through the world. To be aware of what we're doing and take some responsibility for it. but not too much, because then it's too painful. So it's always, it's that middle kind of balance and finding equanimity in the middle of it.
No.
Yeah.
Stephen's poem. Thank you for. I took the plums.
Oh yes, yes. And they were so delicious.
Yeah, they were so juicy and sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Like the red wheelbarrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And that scene.
But the tree is giving the fruit.
Thank you.
Yes, Francois. Yes.
The tree is the one who makes the fruit. Yeah. And wants it to be eaten.
Yeah. Yes. Spoken like a true gardener. It's true. They're rushing out of themselves to share.
It's important to just the act of, like, when you eat like a meal, think, you know, before you eat it. Thinking, you know, I think it's in the same vein. It's like,
yes,
you're being aware of what's happening.
Yes,
thing.
Yes.
This life process.
Numberless labors brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. And when you think about it, it's quite amazing. You know, everything that we do and have comes from somewhere. From far, far, and long, long ago. And we take it so for granted. You know, this little crummy piece of paper, it's nothing. But, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh follows it back and back and ends up in the clouds and in the ocean. And we're all like that. We come from long ago and far away. Russ?
Well, you know, take into account the element of property rights. Different systems. Who has the rights of that property? And is it okay or not okay?
Yeah. Because stealing is about a relationship with somebody else. There's no stealing if nobody owns anything. You know, if we're in Adam and Eve, then, you know, the garden is for everybody. It's for them. And when Jikoji first began, and there were a lot of people living up there who were extremely hippie types, they told us, you know, even though we had spent $50,000 to buy that piece of property, they said, God owns the land. People can't own the land. So we get to stay here because God owns the land. That was their logic. So they thought we were imposing on their freedom by saying that we bought the land and owned it and had a deed to show for it. They called themselves an anarchistic commune, which meant that they stole from each other and argued endlessly. They had big meetings, shouting, yelling meetings. Sharon is laughing. It went on and on. So that is a point of view. That is the Bodhidharma point of view. Not to raise a mind attainable. Not to think of getting things. Not to think that everything is all cut up in little bits and is owned by different people in different ways. We all belong to each other, and all our things belong to each other. In some countries, if you go to somebody's house and admire something, they give it to you. If somebody comes and is hungry and you don't know them in some countries, you just invite that person in and feed them no matter what. It's called being a host. We're very confined. Our way of life is very withheld in a lot of ways, especially around this subject. We lean on the legal side rather than the generosity side. Sharon?
Well, I just want to say this whole thing comes up in driving a car on the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
Or even on the street when people want to cross or don't. I mean, legally you're supposed to allow them, but aside from the legal aspect, I mean, do you go or do you stop and let them cross? Or do you let somebody get in front of you? Or how do you feel when somebody cuts in front of you? Or somebody has their blinker on and really wants to get over, and do you let them cross, or you either specifically don't because you're in a hurry too, well, my hurry is as important as your hurry, or just too spaced out to react fast enough to let them go in front of you. I mean, it all seems like part of the same thing, and we were not even talking about ownership of property, we're just talking about our behavior.
About generosity.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And awareness as well.
And awareness, yeah. Me too?
Everyone's saying, like, legally, like, it's this real thing. Like, laws are just, like, being, like, made up. It's all made up. What people made up to separate us from other people and rules and
yeah.
Someone and the property rights, this whole idea that we can't have property. How do you own property? Like, it's just so strange.
It is.
About it. And I own property, that's just silly. And then like you have a piece of paper saying I own this and you're responsible for it. I don't know. It's hard to say that. I just heard a lot of people saying, hey, well, I don't really give that much credit. It's made up, and if you really knew how it all, what was in the sausage, you'd see it's just random. What is a law and what's not, and what gets to be a law, and why certain things get to be laws and why other things don't, and why we have such awful laws.
Well, didn't they build up the same way the precepts did, that something comes up, and then everybody gets together and says, well, let's not do this, do it that way again. So little by little, yeah. Yeah, let's put a red light up so people will stop. But somebody had to make a decision about that based on it, something that had happened that went wrong. Somebody got run over or something.
There's certain people get to make those decisions.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Les Miserables example. That's a very, just how complicated things could be. I mean, he steals the bread, but I actually have not read the book, but from what I understand, I mean, it was out of necessity. Like,
yes.
He needed to feed his family. I mean, and then all the social, what are all the conditions that led up to that event? And it's pretty obvious in the book that the punishment did not fit the crime. I mean, he gets life for stealing a loaf of bread. I think. In terms of a community, I think people do need to have a kind of established set of rules to go by, in a sense. I mean, it helps even in our city.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. I mean, all the set kind of dance we do is to kind of aid our practice.
Yes. Yes.
Things like that should be taken with that in mind. Like how
Well, and the rules and the laws are made in order to protect other people. And I know in certain situations you can bend the rules because nobody is going to be affected by it at all anyway. And people do that all the time. And even go to court and argue about, how to, because of certain conditions, and it's okay. So that's what I mean by narrow. If we get too narrow about the rules and regs, then our life is so limited. and sleepy. You have to be really on the qui vive if you're going to bend the rules and know what laws mean and how to work with it, how to work with the traffic in the road, how to work with the pedestrians on the street. Anything else?
Something that came up for me was this notion of stealing credit or stealing attention.
Hmm.
Kind of interesting that Anne is, what is the motive, or how important is it? It's no, I don't think there's any laws for that. Well, maybe copyright. Yeah, we could go there.
Yeah, who gets to be the winner? Who gets to be the best? Who gets to be the star?
Was it,
Who
came up with the solution? Whose project idea was it?
Yes.
It's just reflecting. Again, it's a few. Again, life circumstances. But it's so much more than when I first read the precepts. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's stealing money, possessions from people.
Mm-hmm. Bigger, bigger than that. Well, the next one is bigger than that also. Although it's sounds very simple, no misusing sexuality. Very powerful subject in everybody's life, one hopes. Coben translated the actual Chinese words as no incorrect desire way, which puts it in a much bigger field. Sexuality is one of the five desires. There's the desire for food, sleep, shelter, sex, and being known by others. They are all, if you think about it, survival modes. They are each one of them essential to our life, to the human life, to the ongoingness of human life. We have to survive long enough, which means be sheltered and fed long enough to procreate. And so all these urges, these desires in us, from the beginning, are essential. They're also a big problem because our tendency is to want more. If we have a little house, we want a bigger house. If we have a little bit of food, we'd like a bigger one. Everything, especially in our life when we all have so much, even those of us who don't have very much still have so much compared to Beth in Cambodia, for instance, or most of the places in the world. We are just overflowing with all of these things that we need. And so this precept is about greed, about how all of these desires drive us to want more, to be greedy. And greed is about clinging and attachment. In the sutra, the Meal Sutra, we say, to be free from clinging, we must be free from greed. So any one of the five desires is really what this is about. the three wheels that's mentioned here, when the three wheels are empty, there is nothing to desire. This is the way of the Buddhas. The three wheels are greed, anger, and ignorance. So it doesn't mean they go away. The best way is how we do with our practice. We sit with all of our desires, all of our stories. We get real familiar with them. Turning away just means they begin to grow in a way that isn't wholesome. Turning and facing and cultivating, knowing well how things work for us, is the best way, is this precept. So it's about no wrong relationship among not only man-woman or woman-woman, man-man, or it's about teacher-student, it's about parents and children, spouses, any kind of relationship really can go in an incorrect way, the way that Coben said. It's like we have two ways of thinking about love. Love as attachment, of actually almost owning somebody. You know, it's my husband. It's my child. Or the bigger love, the love that over and over lets go of the beloved in order to more completely love. They're very different. So studying that in the way that we are with each other, with those we love. Coben said there is only you, yourself, and the Absolute. There's only you, yourself, and the Absolute. So to have two objects as the Absolute is the basic confusion about the object you are facing. We project on something or somebody and make an idol of it. Rumi said, attachments make you afraid to live in emptiness. So that's the assignment. Coben's translation of the Bodhidharma one is one of my favorites. Its self-nature is sacred and profound in the truth of no attachment, not creating a veneer of attachment, is called not indulging sexual desire. In the truth of no attachment, not creating a veneer of attachment, just a thin layer to make it look like, is called not indulging sexual desire. It's a pretense, actually. The clinging kind is a pretense. So, it's 8 o'clock on the nose.